Women's Shiur. Tavis Halavas, Sunday, Shiur HaBechina. Okay, just again a few words so that we should always think about what we're learning and the purpose of why we're studying these things. When we, Shiur HaBechina teaches us that when we look at these things that we're looking at, and we see the complexity and the plan and purpose and design, and we're seeing Hashem, right? We're seeing the Yad Hashem. So when we say, for example, when we daven, and we say things like we don't think about what it means. We say, for example, Yoducha Hashem kol ma'asecha. So, Yoducha Hashem kol ma'asecha means all your works, all the things that you create, praise you. And we say, then we say, Kvod Malchuscha Yomeru, Ugvorascha Yedaberu. They speak the glory of your kingdom, and they speak of your power. So, how do they speak it? So, maybe we think sometimes there's malachim, the malach of the trees and the malach of the plants, but the truth is there's a more basic pshat. The more basic pshat is that when something is obviously the Yad Hashem, when something, it's speaking of Hashem's greatness when we study it and we look at it and we see its complexity and we see how it was planned for what it's supposed to do and how it works perfectly. So it tells the praises of Hashem in that way, just by being. Its existence is singing to Hashem. Its existence tells the praises of Hashem. We create that by studying it and looking at it. But when we say the Marshal, Baruch Nafshi is Hashem, my soul sings to Hashem, right? Or we say the whole Kravai Hashem Kacho, right? So if you never, or when we say these psukim, when we say these things in psukim, the Zimra or in Nishmas, if we never think about, if we don't study it, like if a person never studied the body, if a person never studied, again, this is classic Chavis Halov, this is Jesus. It's an obligation to do. If you never study the body, if you never studied nature, if you never studied any of the things we're talking about, so then it's not true that these things are singing to Hashem. It's like insincere. His words are empty words. The only way it would be true when you say Baruch Hinafshi Hashem b'chol korvai Hashem kodesho, or if you say Yaducha Hashem kol ma'asecha, that all of your works praise you Hashem, that's only going to be true if you study it, if you learn about it, and then you marvel and you say, wow, look what Hashem does, look what Hashem created, look how complex it is, look how food changes into energy for the body, all the different systems that are put into place for digestion. So what turns out is that if someone says, what's the purpose, what's the purpose of anything? You pick something. What's the purpose of the hand? So the hand has all the complexity that we talked about. But really, and this is what we're learning Shiur HaBechina for, the hand was also made in order that we recognize Hashem through the hand. Now, everything was made to sing the praises of Hashem. Everything was made lechvodo b'rosav yitzarte v'afasisiv, the pasuk says. Everything was made for the honor of Hashem. And what Shiur HaBechina is teaching us is to make that real, to make it true. And if we don't study it, then it's not true regarding us. So the stomach sings the praises of Hashem, the hand sings the praises of Hashem. That's when we study it and we recognize that such a thing could not have come about by itself. Such a thing had to have a creator, and Hashem is the creator, right? So that's when we Moshel, we say when we daven, we say Tov Yotzar Kavod Lishmo, Moros and Sansi Vosu Zo, Ula Ose Orem Gedolim Kili Olam Chazdo. So when we look at the Orem Gedolim and we look at the sun and the moon and we study how it sends energy to the earth and how it's gravity and how it functions in terms of time and how it supplies the earth with everything it needs, so we're seeing Hashem. So that's it. So when we say these psukim, that's how we are the trigger for the Bria to sing the praises of Hashem. Whenever you have such a phrase in davening that the Bria sings the praises of Hashem, it means what we're learning here every Sunday. It means through mankind. It's really, it should be very inspiring. We're not used to this. We're used to saying, okay, I have to learn Hilchus, you know, how to take challah, which we do. You do. And we have to learn how to daven, which we do, etc., etc. But we don't think of such things as having to do with Hashem. But the Chavis HaLodos is... It's the most basic thing we can do. The biggest... The most... And the whole Bria is dependent on us. So normally if I give you a statement, I throw out a statement, the whole Bria is dependent on mankind. So either you say, what does that mean? And in the olden days, pre-Chavis HaLovos days. So I would have explained it, let's say the way the Nefesh HaChaim explains it. I would have fallen back on the Nefesh HaChaim and say a person does mitzvahs or he does averus and he has Bechira and he's the only thing with Bechira. So the whole universe is dependent on mankind, because the whole purpose of the creation was that man should choose to do good and become close to Hashem, and the whole Bria is there to help mankind do this, etc., etc., etc. And he pulls up the whole world, or he Chas v'Shalom pulls down the whole world. Now that's still true, but really there's a more basic idea, and that is by seeing Hashem in the Bria, we justify the Bria's existence. The Bria is creation, the universe, existence itself, everything that's created. We justify it's there so that we could see Hashem through it. That's one of its purposes. If I give a test and I say, what's the purpose of the eye? The answer is, the purpose of the eye is because we see things through the eye, and the purpose of the eye is also a way to see that Hashem is in the world, that Hashem created the world, because only a designer, only a planner, only a master could have designed such a complex thing. There's no way. And that's why... So we're living in times when atheism is the default option. Like, that's the way people live. They don't... We're not inspired by things. We don't right away think, wow, look, there's Hashem in the world. There's a burial. And people, even though they have Avodah Zarah, remember on Wednesdays when we learned Shari Yichud HaMaisa, and he's talking about the Yetzirah, and the Yetzirah tries to get people, so he goes through like the Averis. And the very first thing is that a person shouldn't think anything is transcendent, if you remember. The second thing is Avodah Zarah. And we said, wow, like, you would expect the worst Avera in the world to be Avodah Zarah. But, so, don't get me wrong, it's pretty bad. But, we said, like, wow, there's something like worse. There's something worse. Just the very idea that everything is just is, and there's nothing transcendent, and it doesn't bespeak of a higher power. That's the worst. And there's something to be said. So the world, you know, the Nisayon in the world was always Avodah Zarah, and other religions. First it was Avodah Zarah, then that was shown to be by most of the world saw it as silliness. And even though it had some theological explanation to it, but, you know, as time went on, people became closer to, you know, realized its silliness. And then, what? Avodah Zarah. Like, they still do Avodah Zarah. In Japan, they still do Avodah Zarah. Just ask Justin. He'll tell you about the Avodah Zarah that's done in Japan, that they worship still Eitz Va'Evan. And they have, what?
India.
Yeah. But most of the world, or one could say safely, but again, but now it's atheistic. Now everybody just denies. They just either they deny it actively or passively. It's just not part of their, it's not part of our lives. It's not part of Western man. Certainly, it's not part of Western man's life. And so we have to fight that. That's a fight, and that's a hard fight, because you go out and everything is. And as I say, as civilization progresses, it's really regressing, because we're more menutak from Hashem. As we have water in our taps, and as we move away from an agriculture, the industrial society, I said this many times, the industrial society really was a big leap backwards in terms of living with Hashem, because that's why the Torah is so agricultural, and all the Matnos Kahuna and Matnos Leviya and giving Staka and everything is agriculture. Not because they were backwards then, and that's punct when the Torah was given. I mean, that might be true, but I mean, Hashem chose to give the Torah at a point in time in history where people lived with directly relating to the earth and the rain and growth and cycles. And now, every time we walk into a store, every time, it's tough, and that's why Shara Bechina is so important. Okay, let's start with, I don't know, we keep on going backwards and forwards. So now we're going to keep on track. V'halev mishkan hachom hativi u'mabua hachayim. How's that? Is that okay, or that's going backwards again? I keep on taking notes. That's my problem. My notes keep on bouncing back and forth. V'halev mishkan hachom hativi. It's the source of the natural body heat. U'mabua hachayim, and that's the source of life for the person. So first we talk about Hachom HaTivi, which is indeed the body has a constant temperature, and it's a very small range, the body's temperature, and that there's a lot of functions, many complex functions performed in the body depend on the temperature staying within very narrow limits. Now the blood plays the most important role in equalizing the temperature throughout the body. The blood controls the heat. And as we're just talking about now, the blood, he's talking about the heart and the blood, Menela, that sends out the blood. We already saw about the blood is life, right? That's how the Pasuk describes blood. Blood, we already saw, is the purveyor of what the digestive system breaks down food into all of its components that serve the body. So the blood is the delivery man. The blood delivers to all the parts of the body, right, exactly on schedule and exactly what it needs. All the different components that the food breaks down into, whether it's vitamins or sugar or starches or iron or protein and everything, sends it to the parts of the body that needs what it needs. I mean, there's so many aporim in the body, right, there's thousands of deliveries made. And it all gets to the right place, and it all goes where it's supposed to go. But now we're talking about blood, because the lave and blood, not as the purveyor of food, but as the adjuster of the body heat. The body has to be a certain temperature in order to perform all of the functions of the body. So the blood controls the heat of a person's body, and its flow is automatically adjusted to maintain a constant temperature. What does that mean? When the body is too hot, the blood vessels in the skin expand to carry the excess heat to the skin surface. The person begins to sweat, and as the sweat evaporates, it helps cool the body. When the body is too cold, the blood vessels contract so that blood flows to the skin so that the blood flow to the skin is reduced to conserve body heat. The person may start shivering, which is an involuntary rapid contraction of the muscles. This extra muscle activity helps generate more heat. Under normal conditions, these actions keep the body temperature within a narrow, safe range. The heart is an amazingly compact pump, which never rests. It contracts and relaxes some 70 or so times a minute, and squeezes and pumps blood through its chambers to all parts of the body. It does this through the extraordinary collection of blood vessels. Actually, the heart is two pumps in one. Its right side receives blood from the body and pumps it to the lungs to absorb fresh, life-giving oxygen. The left side of the heart does the exact opposite. It receives blood from the lungs and pumps it out to the body. All cells need oxygen to live. An adult's heart, which is about the size of a fist, pumps nearly 4,000 gallons of blood each day. Without this blood flow, our organs couldn't get the oxygen and nutrients that they need to survive. We couldn't keep warm or cool off. We wouldn't fight infections, and we couldn't get rid of our own waste products. The blood travels through a rubbery pipeline with many branches, both big and small. Strung together end to end, one person's blood vessels would circle the earth 2.5 times. The tubes that carry blood away from the heart are called the arteries. They are like hoses that carry blood pumped under high pressure to smaller and smaller branched tubes called capillaries. The tubes that more gently drain back to the heart are veins. And I'm like, it's like amazing. Everything is the way it's supposed to be. The capillaries are so fine that the red blood cells have to pass through in single file. And despite the fact that the blood is viscous, the heart pressure keeps on pushing it through to every part of the body. It goes all the way to the scalp, the tips of our fingers, and to the tips of our toes. It then comes all the way back up our arms and legs, fighting gravity to be pumped through the heart again. The action of the heart is what brings nourishment to all parts of the body to keep a person alive and to give the person the opportunity to accomplish his purpose in life. That's why it's the Mabua HaChayim, it's the wellspring of life. Now, Rabbi Avigdor Miller says, when we talk about the heart, we can't limit ourselves to, we could speak about it forever. How does it start working? A mechanical pump operates with a switch. Someone turns it on. Who turned on the human heart? Only Hashem. In the development of the embryo, there's a point in time when the heart suddenly starts pumping, indicating, at some point, it starts. That plan is, the plan of the universe is also evident in the special way that the heart works in the embryo. Oxygenated blood is supplied to the embryo from its mother so that the blood circulates through a special aperture from one part of the heart to another part. As soon as the baby is born, that aperture is closed, never to open again. Now, instead of blood going from one part of the heart to the other part, it first goes to the lungs to get its oxygen, and it then returns to the heart to be pumped out to the rest of the body. So there's an entirely different blood circulation system for a newborn child, and the switchover is not a gradual development. It happens immediately when the child's born. That's how Hashem designed it. The more we study it, the more we realize how many things must work perfectly for a normal child to be born, and most people are born normal in every respect. Any failure can be the cause of the baby's body being terribly crippled or defective. So when finally a child is born, it's a collection. He goes into this subject now. Really, the Chazal is going to mention the child in the uterus soon. Is a collection of numerous miracles, with each one by itself being a wonder of wonders. And like just to be born is like an amazing, and that the Avorim function. As much as we talk about the heart, we will never exhaust the profundity of the Chasdei Hashem. David HaMelech says, Nichsefa v'gam kolsa nafshi l'chatzros Hashem, libi u'besori, my heart and my flesh, yirananu el kel choy, sing to Hashem. That means what we said before in the Hagdama. That just its mere existence, it's, how does the heart sing to Hashem? It doesn't have to mean something, I say, there's a malach of the heart that sings to Hashem. And it means the heart sings of Hashem's praises by being, and when we study it, we unleash that song. We unleash that song. And that's how we bring the Bria to its tafkid, by seeing Hashem. It's like the Malach, right? With Esav, with Yaakov, the Malach of Esav with Yaakov. So when he reached his purpose, he said, Shalchuni, it's my turn to say Shira, Rashi says, because he reached his purpose. His purpose being, the way the Mepharshim explain it, the Yetzirah's purpose is to lose. His purpose is, it's like the old New York Mets. The Yetzirah's purpose is to lose. That's what Hashem wants it. That's what it was created to lose. It wasn't created to win. If the Yetzirah beats you, it's very disappointed. Because it also is supposed to serve Hashem. It serves Hashem by giving you Bechira. But, like, its ultimate purpose, it's like if a king sends, a messenger to test his son. So the messenger's ultimate purpose is to lose. That's what everybody wants. The whole Bria is waiting for that to happen. It wants it to happen. It wants to lose. It doesn't want the Melech to lose out. It wants the Melech to win. So Michtam Eliyahu makes this point, and he says it's something we should think about when we're battling the Yetzirah. He says, you're really battling someone who also wants to lose. I'm not sure how that helps you. But the Bria, certainly, the Bria, again, the more we learn Chavis HaLavos, the more we see that the Bria exists to speak of Hashem. And that's what we keep saying, the Malachim sing about Hashem, and the whole Nishmas. Nishmas is a beautiful, beautiful tefillah, which speaks only of praising Hashem and singing the praises of Hashem. And the real point, it's not that praise Hashem. My understanding is that the real point is to be aware of Hashem. Singing His praises just means, just like a child could learn Chumash, a child could learn a Pasuk of Chumash, and really there's a very complex series of comparisons of learning Torah to studying the Bria. That's a topic in itself. But it's fascinating. It's like an alternate universe. Torah is also the universe. And whatever I say about Shara Bechina is really in Torah also. It's complexity and plan and design and the whole system and the way it works and everything. It's like a whole mother shechva of existence. Be that as it may, my point is, you can learn a pasuk in a chumash. Just like a child can learn in fourth grade about a flower. And a child can learn in fourth grade a pasuk in Chumash. So he understands it, like, on a certain level, and he's happy, he understands it. But as you get older and older and older, and your brain becomes more and more developed, and you're able to understand things in a more and more sophisticated way, in a more and more subtle way, and it opens up all new worlds. And all of a sudden, and then you have the biggest people who have devoted their lives to studying floral life, right? And they see so much in a flower, and they're so different than the fourth grader that learns in science class about a flower, and he learns the basic parts of a flower and photosynthesis, but there's so much more. And then, so as we develop intellectually, it's not so you're aware of Hashem. And then you become more aware because you see how complex it is and how intricate it is and how fascinating it is and how it's so, and how it like fits in with the rest of the Bria, and it just fits together perfectly. So then you start singing. It's like you're not just aware of Hashem, but you're actually, like sometimes things happen in our lives, and we're aware of Hashem and we believe in Hashem, but sometimes like we're zochet to see it, like wow. Usually it's when your child does a shidduch. You say, wow, and you reach a level of seeing that you didn't have before, and your heart wants to sing to Hashem. You feel very inspired. And that's what David HaMelech talks about. That's what Tillim is full of. When you say Tillim, Tillim is Tillim. It's like an amazing work. It's compared to Torah, actually. It's very, you know, we talk about Shara Bechina being like learning Torah. You study the Bria. Tillim is full, is split up into five Svarim, basically, like five Chumashim. And the Gemara compares Tillim to Torah. And it's a different way of relating to Hashem. And it speaks of Bitachon, and it speaks of Amunah, and it speaks of the Bria, and it speaks of all the parts of the body and all the Bria, just singing the praises of Hashem. And that's what we do when we study this. So, okay. So now the heart will go weiter. We're going to move on. Okay, he brings down now parts of tefillah, where we say, Gomel chasodim tovim li'amo Yisrael. So we should think about chasodim tovim, or Gomel chasodim tovim b'konei hakol, we say the first bracha of Shemoneh Esrei. So now you have what to think about. Gomel chasodim tovim, you have, like every day, you could think about something else, a different part of the Bria, a different part of the body. Or you say, Rofei chole amo Yisrael. Right, and you think of all the things that could go wrong. And you can think about, you don't have to be thinking about cholim only, and Hashem should make it work properly. But and when our bodies are working properly, we're not getting sick. Things are functioning properly. Rofei cholei amo Yisrael, where Hashem is holding the keys to everything in the body functioning properly. Okay, v'hamoach. That's the brain. So the lave, he said, the lave is the mishkan achomativi, keeps the body temperature where it's supposed to be. We saw through the blood, umabu achayim, and is the seat of life. The hamoach, because for everything to function, it needs blood and oxygen, and that's supplied through the blood and the heart pumping. The hamoach, that's the brain, mishkan hakochos haruchni, that's the seat of the seat of the spiritual faculties. Everything, what we are, is in our brain. If you want to know, I mean, we talk about the brain, sometimes it's called the moach, sometimes it's called the lave. There's a complex relationship there. The lave in the Lashon of Tanakh usually refers to the mind, not the mechanical pump that pumps blood, but there's a connection between the brain and the heart, and like that's where the person's soul resides, in the heart. And it's not just a question of having the knowledge. When he says the human brain is mishkan hakochos haruchniyam, he's not talking about just, I mean, the brain has all the knowledge, and you need knowledge, you need memory, you absorb ideas, we absorb thoughts when we experience life. We have thoughts. This is all going on in the brain. But it's not just so first of all, the brain is a storehouse for all these things, and we fill up the storehouse sometimes with too much garbage, which we shouldn't do. But when a person dies, right, life is short. Life is short. And then we shed the body. So what is a person, the neshama that goes, the neshama that it's, what am I? A deep existential question. Who am I? What am I? It's all kosher with the brain. I mean, it's my neshama, but it's the knowledge that I've attained. It's internalized knowledge. I think I always, I don't have any, my theory, what I hold is that lave refers to internalized knowledge. When it becomes part of me and part of who I am, not just a storehouse of knowledge in this thing up here in the head, in the cranium, which absorbs the knowledge and has the knowledge and is the storehouse of knowledge and is an amazing thing. If you study the brain with the parts of the brain that's memory and the part of the brain that just functions mechanically and runs our whole body without our thinking about it usually. And when a person dies, right, that's all physical. But what I've absorbed into my heart, we say into my neshama, what made a difference in my life, where I've internalized, we say you internalize that knowledge, and you lived accordingly. You know, sometimes we should act alpi that knowledge, but even if we don't act alpi that knowledge, it just makes us a different person. You experience something and you become a more sensitive person. You become a more caring person. You become a person more sensitized to other people's needs because of something you experience. That's because you gain some knowledge, right? People tell me things, right? I said, and you hear things, and you become hopefully you're supposed to become more sensitive to people. You say, you know, I never realized that people react that way. I never realized that can make a person feel bad, or that can make a person feel good, or that could ruin a whole person's day. So you take this knowledge and it becomes part of your life, and that's who you are. That's your neshama. That's what determines your closeness to Hashem. That's you. You is not the body. You is not. It's not even the mind. I mean, he says the mind, but it's the mind, and then we absorb it. Not just the storehouse, but we absorb it and we possess it. It's an ace. It's an ace. That goof is an ace. What does he call it? The Mishkan HaKochos HaRuchniya is in the brain, and there's a method which is an intangible. I don't think science has a way of describing it. I don't think they have a way of describing it. Where not just acting upon the knowledge, that you could say is a regular physical function, where I have a piece of knowledge in my brain, and I have a memory, and I remember that this brings bad consequences, so I act accordingly, so I shouldn't have the bad consequences. We have a neshama. We have a neshama. That's who we are. And the neshama is it's an ace. And it's very sad that you see sometimes people who are brilliant and people who have so much knowledge and even Torah knowledge, and it just, you have this feeling sometimes that it has it's rare, but it just doesn't click. Something, there's a disconnect. That's what the Gemara talks about it. The Gemara talks about that the Torah could become a sam hamavis. The Torah could become a poison. It's not always a sam hachayim. It's not always a potion of life. It depends what the person does with it. And there's some sort of, I don't know if it's mystical or it's physiological, or it's, you take that Torah and it just, you absorb it into your neshama. It becomes real. And you act accordingly. Maybe it's not even such a mechanical, mental process of processing memory and acting accordingly with the knowledge of consequences. Right? That's all very good. That's all wonderful. But it's very mechanical. I think it's more than that. It still might not speak of who you have become. It might not. That's why ultimately we don't want to do things because of schar ba'onesh, right? That might be just a mechanical reaction to certain consequences. So we think, you know, I don't want to be like almost like an animal, chas v'shalom. You know, I don't want to be, the animal doesn't want to get hit with a stick, so it's Pavlovian. It acts a certain way because it knows it's going to hurt if it acts a certain way. But Hashem wants much more of us. Hashem wants our neshama to bond with Him, because our neshama is from Him, a chelik of Him. That's in Hasidic literature, talks about that a lot. How in all literature talks about how the neshama is a chelik alo kamimal. Hasidic literature attempts to explain what it means. And we purify our souls as we absorb Torah values. And that's really the end of the day. If you would ask me, and even if you wouldn't ask me, obviously you're not asking me, at the end of the day, it's it's, I think at the end of the day, our neshama, like who we are, is the degree to which our neshama, our being, it's an intangible. The soul is something that scientists won't admit. They're happy with a mechanical heart and a mechanical brain, and maybe they'll say, okay, we don't understand how a person is creative, how a person thinks of an idea. Like, where does that come from? Okay, so they don't know. But there's much, much more. The neshama is the essence of the person which has absorbed Torah values, Hashem values, spiritual values, and has absorbed it means it has, it shapes it, it forms it, and it becomes part of what it is. And that's how, that's why, like, the biggest mitzvah of all is to be like Hashem. It's like the greatest instruction for life. You have to learn to do, to know what it means to be like Hashem. You have to learn, right? A lot of it is to be a giver, not a taker. That's like, Michtam Elio really makes that into a major, major, major part of what Hashem is, and therefore what we should be. Givers, not takers. Another part of being like Hashem is, so that's a value. And then you live accordingly, and that's part of, that's who you are. And then when people are takers, not givers, they're like obnoxious, and they just live a certain way, and that's who they are, and that's how they are. So when we talk about the Hamoach Mishkan HaKochos Aruchniyim, the point I'm trying to make, and I guess I'm not doing too good a job, you'll have to excuse me, I was up most of the night trying to get rid of all that kavod. I was chavis halavavasing. I was like remembering all the things I did in my life, and I said, boy, if they only knew. When it says v'hamoach mishkan hakochos haruchniyim, it means so much more than the storehouse of knowledge of our brain. It means it means there's somehow, oh, I don't know, mystical, I don't like the word, but there's somehow intangible connection between the brain and the lave, which in Nach, lave means mind most of the time, not the mechanical, physical pumping of the blood. And it means the Torah values, spiritual values, and that is who we are, the values we absorb. That's what Hanukkah, you know, you talk about the Yevonim, and you talk about just, it was a value battle. It was a battle of values. Whether the universe is Hashem centered or person centered. That really was the fight. That really was the battle. And, you know, if you could even believe in Hashem or Avodah Zarah, but you relegate it to something like outside the universe, that's not Nogeya. What's Nogeya is a person and scientific knowledge. And the things that a person could control or create, that's the struggle. And you know, even though we celebrate Hanukkah, I think out of all the Yomim Tovim, Hanukkah is the one that that, you know, I don't know, like, L'chaira we won when we celebrate Hanukkah, but it's a never ending battle. Like, look, if you look around at the world we live in today, we would be, you know, it's hard to say that we won, you know, because we're from. But the Yevonim didn't care so much. Okay, they made gzeros against Bris and against, it was really the values. And really, as long as there's a sports team called the Maccabees, or what is this, a soccer team? What is it called? Yeah, that's sad. That's so sad, right? And I don't know. L'chaira we won. Hanukkah was like the last Yom Tov, and we celebrate it. So we won, but it's a struggle. It's always a struggle. And now, ever since like Napoleon and the opening up, the breaking down of the ghetto walls. So we have to ask ourselves: what are our values? Do we have the right values? How much of Western values have we absorbed? Which is the, really, so maybe we should try Hanukkah to dedicate ourselves more. So what am I talking about? Maybe I'm talking in riddles. Maybe I should. We should be more specific, make it more real. It has to do with, if you look up Valachta Bidrachav, right, the two things that I'm remembering now is the Ikar is to be a giver, not a taker, and to be Kadosh, not to be so involved in Gashmius. That world is transient and temporary, and to be godlike is to be Kadosh. Those are the two. The Rambam talks about Midos, being a Rachum, being a Chanun, caring about others. He talks about Midos, that's being like Hashem, and it could be summed up in the Michtam Eliyahu's unbelievably important essay on being a giver, not a taker. And the Rambam also says Kadosh, which means to be Mufrash, to not be so involved in Gashmius. Okay. Are we learning next week? I don't see.